Hi folks, this is Jeff McDonald and welcome to the Ideas Lunch, our fourth webinar. And today we're talking about how to build a cult following. Let's start with the obvious question. Are you a member of a cult? The obvious thing for most of us will immediately shake our heads and say, absolutely not. Being a member of a cult is not really something you put on your census form. So let's see if we can explore that a bit further to start with. So first of all, I've got a series of questions for you just to get a sense of how you relate to some of the brands and the things and the objects and the groups and the society at whole, to see whether you actually really are a member of a cult and you don't know it. So the first one is, which gadgets make you feel cool? So I reckon if I had a pink fridge like this, I'd be feeling pretty cool. And when my friends came over, I'd be pulling beers out of there and I'd be pretty proud of my fridge. So which gadgets make you feel cool? It could be your phone, or in this case, it could be your car. So what does your car say about you? This is the most ridiculous car I've ever seen, to be honest. But what does your car say about you? What do you strut in? Some of you may be old enough to remember John Travolta doing his Saturday Night Fever strut. So what do you strut in? Do you strut with your Gucci bag or your Pierre Cardin tie? Or do you strut with what's your shoes that you wear? Or is there a particular jacket that you wear from a brand that you strut in? And this one cuts right to the core of me. I'm really devastated at the moment. The Simpsons are no longer on at 6 o'clock every night. I used to organise my day around the Simpsons. And when it turned 6 o'clock, I used to quit work for the day and basically not answer the phone for half an hour. So what are your favourite TV shows? And more so, when do you not answer the phone? Is there something you do where you don't answer the phone? So, I don't know whether you've actually been to see the Green Bay Packers in the US, but this is part of their fan base. They're known as the Cheesemakers, and you can see that hopefully in the picture there. And their god, and you can see the guy dressed up as a bishop with the head of Vince Lombardi on his hat. So that shows the nature of their religion over there. So, when did you last get dressed up? Did you go to the football last week and put on the scarf and beanie, or did you go to the cocktail ball and put on your fancy frock or your suit and tie? Do you get dressed up to go to work? Is that part of the cult that you're in? And hopefully you weren't in the London riots last night, but when were you last part of a mob? They're expecting a big mob down in Melbourne tomorrow for Cardale Evans, winner of the Tour de France. So a lot of friends of mine are cycling nuts, so they'll be down there with bells on, or at least their cycling shoes. So when were you last part of a mob? And finally, perhaps the big one, what could you not live without? Certainly I'm an Apple tragic. I have my laptop and my screen and my iPhone, and don't have an iPad yet, but I've been using Macs incessantly for the last 20 years, so I certainly can't do without my Macs. So, cult or cult-like. So have you decided whether you're part of a cult or not yet? And maybe the distinction of cult versus cult-like needs to be made, because most of us still probably wouldn't admit to being a cult because they have such a negative connotation. But what we'll look at, particularly around our branding today, is the qualities of some of brands that have people operate and act as if they're in a cult. So cult-like. So let's look at the four levels of a cult-like following. The first level is someone that uses your product. So they could be, if you're a hardware store, they might come in occasionally and buy a hammer or a nail, and that's about it. So generally your customers, probably a low level of cult. The next level of following that you might get around your business is a repeat offender or a repeat customer. So someone who comes back more than once. So they might be a fan, and every time you put on a workshop or a webinar, they might turn up. So I've got a couple of people online today that have been to three or four of the four webinars that we've had. So they're starting to become repeat attendees. So next level is, who defends your brand in the marketplace? So I know, for example, some of my friends, and I've seen this around the Apple users, that Apple users will often get into fights with PC users, and they'll actually start to defend, and you'll get the PC users defending what they're doing and the Apple people trying to encourage them across to their side of the fence. And so is there someone out there actually defending your brand? So that's a, can you see how that's a higher level than repeating, just a repeat purchaser? And then finally, the referrers. So to go back to that example I was just talking about, Apple versus PC, and you might swap the word refer for recruit. Typically, as cults, we refer to people as recruiters. Where they actively go out and recruit people to join them. And often you'll hear Mac people talking to their PC, and they'll be cajoling them and inviting them to come over to the bright side, as distinct to the dark side that they can leave behind. So does that happen in your business? Do you get people referring clients to you? Do you get people defending your brand or your business? And do you have repeat customers? These are some of the elements of a cult-like following. And you can start to see how this starts to mirror across to levels of loyalty and support in your business. So, are you a member of a cult? Yes, I'm happy to admit I'm a member of a cult. And I'll show you another example of one a bit later that I'm a member of. So, hopefully this is not heresy, or perhaps it is heresy to some of you. But Harley Davidson on the cross. Mixed metaphor. Brands are the new religion. And that's really the point of today, to say that people are looking for the things that they used to find in religions, and we're finding them in the brands and the products that we buy. And you can probably, the best example of that is, and we'll use them consistently today, Apple, and their ability, amazing ability to be able to release a new product and have people line up outside their temple to get the first thing. So you've got people lining up days before, or even at least 5 hours at 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock in the morning, to stand in line to pay money to buy the latest iPad, iPhone, or whatever you like it to be. And in the same way, I hear people, and I've said it myself, particularly going to Sydney, because the Sydney has the Apple Store or the Apple Temple right in the middle of the city, so it's quite easy to visit Mecca whilst I'm in Sydney and go to the Apple Store. And sometimes that's even when I don't want anything. I don't want to buy anything. I just want to go and hang out because it's a cool place to hang out and it's got a nice vibe about it. So you can probably tell I'm part of the Apple cult. So part of this change in branding is reflected in marketing as well. And if you look at the history of marketing over the last 50 years, we've pretty much, the dominant force has been mass marketing. So we've had mass media, and pretty much what's happened is the mass media of TV, newspaper and radio have treated us all as if we're the same. So the same message went out to every single customer, and we're expected to respond en masse to those advertisements and those PR campaigns. And then the pendulum in recent times, going back 10, 20, 15 years ago, has started to swing towards one-on-one marketing. So you may remember we started to get a whole bunch of flyers in the mail that had your name imprinted at the top of it. So it might have said, Dear Jeff, but the rest of the email was marketed as if it was a mass marketing email. So there's an attempt to personalize it. But the failing of one-on-one marketing was that we need to operate inside a context, and one-on-one marketing tends to separate us from our peers, and we tend to make a lot of our buying decisions based on what our friends think. You know, so I might ring up one of my mates and say, hey, what's the best phone to buy? Or there's always someone we ring up or refer to go and see movies. So who's that person for you? And this is where mass marketing failed, but also this is where one-on-one marketing failed. And now what we're getting is a swing back into the middle to community marketing. And community marketing essentially tries to bring the best of mass marketing and one-on-one marketing together. And it says essentially that as a mass of people, it's important that we respond and be part of our communities because that's where our buying decisions are being influenced. And it also is important to be treated as an individual. So marketing has changed, and this is where we get this idea of cult-like followings. If you can develop a cult-like following and draw on the community that surrounds your product, then you're more likely to be heading for success in today's age. So just looking at a couple of comments there. So one of the comments is, are prospects not part of your cult? Generally, I'd say that the prospects aren't part of the cult just yet, because we'll talk about this in a bit later, but they haven't passed the initiation test. So hold that thought, and we'll come back to that a little bit later. So here's a flip back to what we talked about last week in our webinar, which was about three essential things every business needs to build. And we talked about, being capitalists as we are, that we need to build three types of capital. The obvious one being money as a source of capital, and capital being any resource that helps us build wealth. So the simple example for money is having money in the bank earns us some interest. So having money earns us more money. We also looked at ideas or intellectual capital or intellectual property and the ability to make and sell our ideas. And the third part we looked at was people or social capital or human capital. And that's the value we gain from knowing and working with other people. And you can see if we go one step further, if we take away the people model, or the people aspect out of this model, you'll see that it looks, well, clearly it looks lopsided because of the way I've drawn it. But it also flips back to that idea of either are you doing mass marketing or one-on-one marketing, and it's pretty obvious you're not doing community marketing. And the key really needs to be in the age of social media that we need to be including the people in our conversations. Another model or another idea we presented, I think from our second webinar on how to create your big idea, was the sense of having ideas that operate at different scales. So a simple idea may change my own world, and then a bigger idea is going to change our world. So how are we interacting with each other? And this is the area of community marketing. And if you get enough people working together, then they can change the world, or we can change the world. The elements of a cult. What do you think the key elements of a cult are? So if you want to type in some comments there, you can put them into the question box. And in the meantime, I'm going to talk about the cult paradox. So the paradox of cults is that the typical view of people that are in cults is that we think of them as basically losers. You know, they're people that weren't able to function in the real world, so therefore they've gone off and joined this cult, and they're happy to be marginalized and put down and so forth, because basically they're losers and they need to be in the cult to make sense of the world. Well, the research by psychologists actually flips this completely on its head and says it's actually the opposite of that. And it says that the reason people join cults is that they want to be more of themselves. So this is an interesting idea from the point of view of community marketing. So for example, you probably know some people that really get a thrill out of going to the football and cheering for their team. And could you probably imagine that if they were the only one barracking for their team, it might just limit their behaviour? However, if they're in a very large crowd and there's other people that are yelling louder and stronger and more often than they are, it sort of gives them permission to do the yelling and screaming that they want to do as well. And that's part of the way the cult works. By hanging out with other people that are like us, have similar objectives to us, then we can be more relaxed and be more of who we are. So that's the cult paradox. So let's look at the three elements of cults. The first one is meaning. And again, you can flip this back to the idea of brands as the new religion, where previously we gained our meaning in our world by locating ourselves in our communities, through our families, through our schools, through the organizations we were part of, and also through the religions that we followed or believed in. And now what's happening is we're starting to find meaning in other ways, and one of the ways is showing up through the branding that we do. And no accident here, that the key to creating your branding and your meaning in the world is to create an ideology. And as we've talked about in previous webinars, the key or the simplest way to write your ideology is to document it as a manifesto. So if you want to go back to probably the second webinar, how to create your big idea, we discussed how you can create your manifesto. So creating that is a big part of it, and you can probably see some examples of some of the political movements over the years where perhaps the most famous manifesto is the Communist Manifesto, and that was a political ideology. It was basically a social structure of how we could live and should live, and it was presented as here's how we should be living in the world. And it created for the people that believed in that and agreed with that some meaning for them to live their lives from. So a couple of comments or questions that have come in, so around the qualities of cults, and Sarah's commented about the need for common interests, and that's exactly what I think is another way of saying what I'm talking about here with the ideology, that the ideology becomes the glue that is the common interest for people and binds them together. And it's no different from a group of football supporters going to the MCG on the weekend to cheer for their team. There's some common interest or some belief about this team's the good team or the best team, and therefore we should go and cheer them on to victory. Another example is cults have leaders, and the example of Steve Jobs at Apple. And this is an interesting one as well, because this is viewed as one of the popular misconceptions around cults. It's typically viewed that cults have a strong leader to actually build them. And whilst leadership's important inside of cults, it's also seen a lot of the stronger cults that have lasted over longer periods of time have actually not had a strong leader. Instead, the ideology has provided the leadership. And then you have more people stepping up. So rather than one leader, you have multiple leaders stepping up. And because the ideology is the thing that they can refer back to, there's a reference point for them to be able to lead from. And so it's interesting from a corporate perspective that perhaps having a strong ideology may be better than having a strong CEO. So I'll move on to the next one. So the second element of a cult is the sense of belonging. And I'm not sure what you've been reading about the London riots at the moment, but what appears to be emerging, because you've got so many different groups of people that are involved in the riots and looting, that it appears that they're coming from a point that they're all not feeling belonging or feeling part of the community they're in. They're feeling disenfranchised, and they're actually striking back at the rest of society as a result of that. So time will tell whether that's accurate or not. So the sense of belonging is an important part of what we need as human beings. And they've done physiological studies that show that socialisation is one of the crucial things in terms of living a long and healthy life. And there actually is a physiological benefit from being around other people. And there's no accident that people that are often lonely are prone to depression and other illnesses. So belonging is an essential human need. And this is an important part of being part of a cult. The flip on the belonging piece is the type of interactions we have. And this is where, particularly in a business context, that we can design the interactions that have with the people between each other. Traditionally, we've run business from the point of view that it's us towards our customers. And now there's a third piece in it, and it's the customers towards each other. And this is probably best demonstrated on some of the social networking sites, where you can really clearly see, and Facebook is probably the classic example, that it's the people talking to each other that makes the business what it is. It's not us talking to Facebook. It's us talking to our friends. So this example of social network can be that third platform that gets built into a business. So start to think of the ways that your customers can start to talk with each other, because that will build up the community and the following you have in your business. So the third element, so when we have meaning and belonging, we get identity. And ultimately, that's the thing that becomes the decisive factor in deciding what things we buy from a pure economic buying point of view or from a branding point of view. So our identity shape, they become who we are, but also become our image in the world and how we present ourselves to the world. So if I want to be seen as a supporter of the Geelong Football Club, well, it would help if I actually bought a membership ticket, but it would also, one way of doing that would be to wear my beanie and scarf so I can have a visual expression of my identity. And you can extend that into the Gucci brands and the Apple iPhones and the like, where we obtain meaning from the things that it means something for me to be part of this group, and therefore it makes me make decisions that reflect my identity around that. So in other words, I buy the Apple iPhone because my friends have got that and I want to be seen as someone who's cool and up with it and part of my friends and group. So it has this cyclical effect. And I think one of the toughest buying decisions at the moment is which eggs do you buy? I know most of us are on cost conscious, so sometimes buying the cheapest eggs is the way to go. But then do you really want to buy cage eggs, because that may not be that good for the hens that are laying them? And then you've also got all the way, so you could buy free range instead of caged eggs. But then some of the free ranged eggs have got chemicals in them, so maybe you don't want the chemicals, so maybe you want to buy organic free-range eggs. But then again, I suppose you could always be a vegan, so maybe you don't eat eggs at all. So I think eggs used to be a very simple buying decision, and now you can see that it's laced with our values and our identity and our sense of belonging. So you wouldn't go to your party and stand up and say, hey, I just bought all these chemical-filled eggs and I'm going to serve them to you as my dinner party guests. You know, that's probably not going to be good form for you. You might keep that secret if you're going to do that, or you might even share that you've specially bought some different eggs for your audience. So one question from Tim. So what's the difference between a cult and a tribe? That's a good question. The way I would say it is, I think a cult's probably just got a stronger bond, if anything. But I think they're essentially trying to be very similar in the sense that they're aligned to, they've got a distinct beginning and end, like you can see when you're part of a tribe or a cult. But I tend to relate to a cult as being a deeper relationship and perhaps a higher level of recruitment to that tribe rather than just a tribe member who may just be a loyal person. So let's move on to part three, how to build a cult following. So I've got five key sections here, and I've broken them down into three examples for each of the sections. So let's work through these. So the first one, and again, this is my example around my addiction or my cult behavior around Apple, is that I actually took photos of my mouse when I bought it last time because I just thought it was in the most beautiful piece of packaging. And there's been a trend on YouTube to have, or to, not to have them, but it's actually what's happened is the Apple packaging is so gorgeous, and so some people are so fanatical that they've taken videos of them unpacking their computer or unpacking their mouse. So what this is an example of is an initiation ceremony. And we mentioned this earlier. It's about like, so the difference between a prospect and a cult member is someone has crossed a threshold. And usually it is a line, if you think of the army example, and we'll go to that one down the bottom left, the boot camp, where they may have come together as raw recruits, and the idea in the initiation of the boot camp is that they've gone through a major emotional experience together, and typically this bonds and unites them. And it also draws a line in the sand where it says, we're not recruits anymore, we're now part of the army. And this is an interesting idea around initiation for business. So you could do this through your packaging, you could do it through a boot camp, or you could, another obvious one for a lot of businesses is to do a seminar. And the advantages of a seminar is that you can get people together to actually interact around things. And one of the big things around cults is that people buy other people. So if you can get the right group of people in the room, and people start to get a sense of, hey, I like hanging out with this group of people, then you could be on your way to building a following around what you're doing. Next example, and this is a rather bad photo that I took at a wedding one day, is make me an expert. And the point of this photo was, you know, if I'm going to take bad photos like this, I'm not really going to show my friends, have a look at this photo. And if I'm taking bad photos, they're not really going to come back and go, hey, you know, what camera are you using? Or if they are, they're going to put it on their blacklist of don't buy that camera. So if you can make your audience more of an expert in what they do, they're more likely to talk about you, and they're more likely to show their work to other people. So imagine if I'd taken a fantastic photograph here, and you absolutely loved it. You'd be asking me what camera that I used. So therefore, it suits you, if you were the camera seller, to give me some lessons to make better cameras, you make the better cameras, I'll take better photos. Make it easier for me to make better photos. And then it sets it up for me to be able to share that. So one opportunity there is that if you were a camera maker or even a camera store where you sold cameras, you might want to provide lessons, or you might even want to provide a service. So for example, we'll go back to Apple again. They've sold their hardware for many years, but they're also getting enormous results from having their Genius Bar at their stores. And what's that allowing people to do is become more of an expert around the use of their Apple. So they get better value, they talk more of their friends, they're more likely to show what they're doing, and it just is spinning off into future sales for them. It's also beautiful timing, because I believe yesterday Apple had the highest market capitalization of any company in the world. So they're obviously doing something right. And then the third example there is, if you're the provider of some hardware or a product, then you might want to partner. If you don't want to provide the service of teaching someone else, you might want to provide a JV or a joint venture partnership with someone to provide that service. And one example is Myob. So Myob provide accounting software, and there's a whole industry of people that have grown up around Myob that are Myob instructors and trainers. So Myob produced the software, and they've got a team of people that help others be experts in the use of that software. And what that does is, when you become an expert in something, it embeds you into the use of that, and you're more likely to commit to that to a longer period of time. Whereas if I only know a little bit about how to use my camera, it's very easy for me to go and buy another one. Whereas if I'm an expert in the use of my camera or my software, I might think twice before I buy something else. Our next point is that if we go back to the triangle that we looked at before, that at the tip of the triangle, in terms of your cult followers, is that they're going to want to refer you, or ideally they're going to want to refer you. So the best way to do that is to teach them how to do that. And the first point down the bottom there is, you want to be really clear who you want to refer, because there'd be a bigger mistake. So what would be worse than getting no referrals would be getting referrals from the wrong clients. And they might be the wrong client in terms of they can't afford you, they don't have the expertise to make the best use of your product, or they just might be difficult to work with. So you want to get really clear who is your ideal customer. The second one is, you want to get really clear about what you want people to say about you. And often it's hard enough for ourselves to sell our own services. So how hard or how difficult is it for someone else to then sell us for them? So how difficult is it for others to sell us if we can't even sell ourselves? So if you can come up with some scripts and some tight wording and packaging, then it's much easier for other people to be able to refer you. And one of the best examples of this is to provide a 2-for-1 coupon. And the beautiful thing about a 2-for-1 coupon is that you've got the referral on a physical card. So for example, I am running a workshop next week, if I had a 2-for-1 card on that and I gave it to someone who was interested in coming to my workshop, then I've instantly got someone who may go and talk to their friends about coming to the workshop with them. That way they can either split the cost, or they can at least get it for free if the other person tends to pay for it. So that would be my recommendation. If you want to build, the easiest way to build referrals into your business is to offer a 2-for-1 card. So the next time this customer comes, they can bring another customer with them. The fourth idea for building your cult following is to make people part of your life every day. So you want to what we're trying to do is make you essential to them. So for example, a success ritual. So when you watch some of the sports people, you'll notice that when certain things happen, they do a particular thing, which just reinforces the anchoring of their success. So typically a cyclist coming across the finishing line will zip up their jersey and then put their hands up in the air and make sure their jumper's very clear for the TV cameras to watch. And the example back to your business is, when you've got a really good result, what's the thing that you can do to be involved with or reminded of that result? Another example is a planning tool. So, for example, a calendar or a diary or an iPhone app is a great way to be part of someone's life every day. And similar, these sort of tools are reminders of success. Or, in particular, photos might be a reminder of the past. So if you can give people, for example, if they came to, say, Movie World on the Gold Coast or something like that, a theme park, and you took a photo of them, then having that reminder means that they'll remember things more likely. And in particular, if they stick it on their desk, other people will be able to see it as well. So you can be part of their life in that way. And our fifth example is probably the most important. So it's pretty easy in most football codes that you can usually find people that like a football code and not another one. So you're going to have your people that, if I say AFL's the greatest football code in the world, you immediately get people saying, no, soccer is, or rugby union is, or rugby league is. And then inside of every football competition, there's always a team that everybody loves to hate. And in the AFL, typically, it's Collingwood. So you either tend to barrack for Collingwood or you barrack against Collingwood. And this is one of the highlights of how do you build a cult following. You've got to have an edge. And if you make it exclusive or inclusive to a group of people and you deliberately exclude others, then you're more likely to get that edge. And there's five ways down the bottom of doing that. So the first one is the classic country club or the golf club, where you need an invitation to join. So if you're on the inside, then you have the power to include others or exclude them by inviting them or not inviting them. Knowledge. So if we got together a group of computer geeks all in a room, you'd either have the knowledge to be inside that group or you wouldn't. You just wouldn't know what they're talking about. Price is very exclusive. So as much as I might want a Ferrari, because they cost a couple hundred thousand dollars, I simply can't afford them. So that excludes me from buying them. Availability. I know in the US, the Super Bowl, or in the same in Australia for the AFL Grand Final, there's only so many tickets that go around. So if you're one of the lucky ones that gets to be one of those 100,000 tickets, then you get to go to the game. If not, too bad, you have to stay home and watch it on the TV. And similarly, our beliefs. Greenpeace is probably one of the great examples here. You may believe and agree with what they're doing and therefore join and align with what they're doing, or you might disagree. So having that edge comes from including some group of people and excluding others. So to wrap up here and get you into the action phase, what's next for your cult? Bang, hopefully you got that. So this is the point I was making about the footballers, in particular the idea of including people and excluding people. The biggest thing that will stop you from having a cult following is trying to please everyone. And instead, what you want to be is dare to be a little bit different, and ideally dare to be you, you know, because this is the point where we want to be part of groups, but only groups that fit for us. We don't want to be part of a vanilla organization or a generic thing. We want to be part of something that's unique, where I get to be more of me. So that's probably the best summary that I can give around how to build a cult following, and that's daring to be different. So a couple of actions for you. So if you haven't already, write your ideology, write your manifesto. And if you need a hand, go back to some of the earlier webinar recordings that we've got, and that'll give you some clues on how to write your manifesto. And in particular, go to 1000manifestos.com, which is one of my projects. And you'll see, I think we're up to 150 manifestos, might be today going up. So go and have a look at that. So 150 examples of manifestos, 850 to go. Second thing I think you need to do is go back to last week's webinar and define your people goal. Define what is the community goal or the cult goal. Why would you want to get people together? Why would they want to come together? What resources are you willing to put to it? Are you willing to commit to it long term? Ask yourself and define some of these goals for yourself around the people and the social capital and the human capital inside and around your business. So to follow up on that earlier comment, this is your opportunity where you might be able to define how do you get those prospects to become customers and how do you get them to be customers coming back again and again. And ideally, even further, how do you get those customers referring other customers to you? And the third suggestion is you might want to revisit the examples in this webinar where I gave you five key ideas and three actions on each of those. Go and take one of those actions and implement them. See if that makes a difference. And our next webinar, so that's the end of the content for today. A couple of updates for what's coming for the next week. Next webinar next Thursday, same time, 12:30 to 1:15, the seven keys to ideas marketing. So we've started to address some of these in the last couple of webinars, and I'm going to outline a very clear platform of how they fit together and how you can take advantage of them. Which leads me next to my next question. So I love these questions. So are you an idealist? So I'm definitely an idealist. I believe that ideas change the world. And I guess that's what I'm trying to build in my life and my business is how can I fulfill the ideas that I want to have happen? So it's not just a fulfillment of the business, it's a personal fulfillment as well. Which leads me on to the workshop that I'm running. And this is what I've spent probably the last 10 years looking at. How do I design, build and sell my own ideas? And I've come up with a platform and a process around how to do this now. And I'm starting to get some much better results from what I do. So if you're interested, the workshop, how to design, build and sell your own ideas so you can fulfill yourself and fulfill your ideas. And the details there, the normal price is $450. Given this is the first workshop, I'm giving a special introductory price of $270. And that includes a one-on-one with me after the event to make sure you've got a clear action plan for implementation. That's normally valued at $450, so you're getting great value at $270. So if you want some more information on that, it's idearchitect.com.au/ideaslunch, and that's on next Friday the 19th. And there's the link again. So that's the end of today's webinar. We've finished right on 1:15. So thanks for being part of the show today. And the recordings and the slides will be up at that address probably about this time tomorrow. So thanks for being part of us and look forward to you being on next week's show. Bye for now.